The following recording is a production of Kicking Out at 2 in conjunction with the Retromania Pro Wrestling Podcast Network and is intended for private use only. For more information, head on over to facebook.com/kickingoutat2 or our Twitter handle @kickingout2, along with searching Retromania with a W on any and all podcast platforms available to listen to archive shows such as this and all the great content of the Retromania Pro Wrestling Podcast Network. Evergreen content at your fingertips anytime at your listening pleasure. And with that being said, we thank you for listening and hope you enjoy the show.
This is a Monday Night Wars double feature recap here on Kicking Out at 2. I'm Dave Rosenbluth. This is Dennis Levy.
What's
up,
Ledger?
That's right. And we are we're going back in time, back to the retro format. Taking a little bit of a different approach here with this this Monday Night Wars double feature, and we're going to recap the episodes of WCW Monday Nitro and WWF Raw is War from April the 26th, 1999. Now, there's not a whole lot of significant historical significance, I guess you should say, when it comes to these episodes. This is more of a personal touch because the episode of Monday Night Raw was the very first WWF televised event that I attended. It took place in Hartford, Connecticut at the old Hartford Civic Center, which is now known as the XL Center. It was the night after the Backlash pay-per-view. So there's a little bit of a sentimental value when it comes to that episode. And ironically enough, I obviously wasn't able to watch Nitro that night, but when I came home, I happened to turn on Nitro right at the right time during one of the highly anticipated bouts from that match, from that show, Sting and Diamond Dallas Page for the WCW World Heavyweight title. So there's some memories flowing back, and I'll get into that as we recap this. But how you been, Dennis?
Terrific. Life as well. Toronto Maple Leafs are in the playoffs.
Okay.
UConn Huskies won the national championship.
Yeah.
And the Mets, they started off awful.
But
of this recording, yesterday we destroyed the Atlanta Braves.
Yes.
I definitely do remember
seeing the score of that. It was nice. You know, we'll see how it goes when it comes to our Mets. But overall, what did you, you know, we'll get into the details, the nuts and bolts, but just what, you know, briefly share with me your thoughts going back and watching both of these shows as we get ready to recap.
I had a fun time watching them, but I'm in between cars. When you picked me up, I said the word of the day, bad acting.
Yeah.
Both shows.
Yeah.
I just wish they were more, let's not waste half a show on Ric Flair and Sayer Asylum, and on the other side of the spectrum, let's not wait half the show, Vince McMahon going back, pacing back and forth in a fucking garage. I just thought they could have done better time with the airtime.
Okay, all right. Well, let's get into it. Let's start off with Nitro first.
Yep.
From Fargo, North Dakota. This show took place. The opening video package will recap last week's Nitro as we see Roddy Piper and Ric Flair book their match for Slamboree while Ric Flair gets sent to the insane asylum thanks to Piper as he gets David Flair and others to sign a mysterious document. We also get clips from the DDP Goldberg main event the week before with Paige injuring Goldberg's knee and then Kevin Nash, of all people, making the save. What are your thoughts on that opening video package to start things out.
Fine.
Okay. All right. We go inside the psych ward with the doctors and the nurses. They have no idea what to do with Ric Flair. And then the nurse says, well, I have an idea. And she tells all the patients that tonight you can't watch Nitro, which gets them all riled up. And then Flair shows up in his robe, his blue sequin Nature Boy Ric Flair robe and a pair of Florida Gator boxer shorts. He thinks he's in a high-rise hotel, not a psych ward.
Yep.
He dances with the nurse, and other patients in the loony bin are also enjoying themselves. This is going to be a common reoccurring theme throughout the course of this episode of Nitro. What were your thoughts on the psych
the first
ward?
First things first, I thought the nurse was, I mean, she was gorgeous.
Yeah, she was good-looking chick.
But I'm like, she's asking for trouble wearing that dress.
Yeah.
Skirt, I should say.
Around Ric Flair, yeah.
That's a skirt.
Yeah.
But anyway, I get it. That they were trying to go, my opinion, they were trying to do a watered-down one
flew over the cuckoo's nest.
Yeah, I get it.
Okay.
Like I said, it was a fun little spot. Ric Flair acting nuts. Hot girl in a skinny dress.
Yep.
that. But it wasn't believable. Obviously, it was not 1 second did you believe he was in the Salem Asylum.
Okay.
It was
still funny, but it was
funny, but it was ridiculously unbelievable.
Okay. All right. Moving on. Yep. Charles Robinson is in an office at the arena with, talking with J.J. Dillon and discussing his role as the vice president of WCW. And J.J. Dillon assures him that he is the vice president of WCW. And he is in charge of running things for the evening. So we're kind of setting the scene here a little bit when it comes to the theme here.
Yeah.
We're going to have some sort of chaos ensue with questionable management and things like that. Mike Tenay and Tony Schiavone calling the action as Bobby Heenan is out with an illness. As we hear Roddy Piper's music playing, Roddy Piper basically comes out, proclaims that Flair's in the loony bin and he's in charge. As the commissioner of WCW, he officially reinstates Macho Man after Flair refused to clear him a few weeks prior. He also books Randy Savage in a U.S. title match with Big Papa Pump Scott Steiner. But he is interrupted by Diamond Dallas Page. Piper suggests that Page give Sting a title shot. The crowd goes crazy for that announcement. But Page says he wants nothing more than to defend the title against Sting, but tonight he's decided to decline that suggestion. And Piper reminds him that he's the boss and Page will defend the title against Sting tonight. And he's not too thrilled about that. So what are your thoughts on that first segment there?
Now here's the thing. This is what was funny. I'm doing a little bit of spoiler alerts here.
Okay. So you're going to ruin this.
Charles Robinson mentioned, I'm the man in charge. I'm doing all this stuff.
Yep.
So then Roddy Piper, about 5 minutes later, comes out and goes, these are the matches, and these are what's going
to
happen. And
well, I was going to get to all of that. But anyway, that's part of the recap. Right,
I'm just saying.
You did a great job doing the homework. I'll say that.
At this point, though, it's like, wait, you say Charles Robinson's in charge, but now here comes the commissioner, and anyway.
So now we're in a bit of a power struggle, is where you're getting
right,
at.
Right, right. But with that being said, it's clearly who's the sheriff and who's the deputy.
Okay, all right. We go to commercial, and then we come back from the break, and we got the NWO music playing, and it's Brian Adams from the NWO Black and White making his way to the ring. He takes on former NWO member Conan, K-Dog. What did you think of this match overall? And
it was clearly a clash of different styles.
Yep.
And it wasn't a banger. But
no.
But you know what? I enjoyed it. I it was like there's... I don't know if you noticed this this roll up. I thought Adams did this quick pin roll up to Conan, but it was Conan. I couldn't tell whose shoulder was down. I literally rewinded three times, and I'm like, wait a second, who? Granted, it was only a two count. It wasn't the finish or nothing, but still, it was like the guys in broadcast were like, I think Conan was pinning Adams here.
I don't remember seeing that. Other than
that weird spot, I enjoyed that match.
I do remember seeing Conan deliver that like leg tequila sunrise, like one-legged Boston crab kind of move.
That's exactly what we're talking about.
To win the match. So like, yeah, I think that's what you're getting at. Like he rolls him up, but it looks like Adams is on top, but then Conan rolls back and he catches the leg. We get a little NWO Black and White jumping Conan at the end. Now, to the best of my recollection, 25 years ago, this NWO Black and White didn't really seem to have any kind of direction. They were like the B team, and they were like presented as the B team with this red and black group that had reformed with Hogan and Nash and Hall and all them. But what were your thoughts on the NWO B team and their presence in this segment?
Unpopular opinion. I love Scott Norton in NWO.
Oh, I love Scott Norton too.
I'm just saying, I just see people pissed off.
The rest of them can go, go kick rocks. But Norton was the stud out of that group.
Experiment. It didn't. I thought it failed at the end, but I thought it was an interesting experiment to have Scott Norton as the leader of the of a group. It's just in NWO.
Yeah.
The ship has sailed. It has sailed. And at that time, but I would have liked to see Scott, as a heel fashion, of course, that him being the boss. I think that could have been very successful. Like he could have been, his and his gang would have been like the gatekeeper for like, I don't know, a mid-card championship or whatever.
Yeah.
I think that could have gone very well.
In hindsight, looking back on it, like they, I get what they were trying to do. They were trying. It seemed like they were trying to get to some kind of finale with this NWO group. That they're, you know, that maybe like they were phasing them out, and that was going to lead to them like all going off and doing their own things. Maybe Stevie Ray going back with Booker T, and Scott Norton doing his own thing, and Horace Hogan doing his own. You know what I mean? Like nothing of great significance, but it seemed like there was some kind of direction where they were trying to phase out this B team group so that it was just the elite of the NWO, Hogan, Hall, Nash, Steiner, you know, names like that. Yeah. But I was actually pleasantly surprised at how into the match the crowd was. They were really behind Conan. I mean, he was popular at that time.
Yeah.
And Adams played a good, you know, big rugged heel in the match too. So overall, it wasn't a bad opening segment or opening match to start. What do we got here? A Sting video package reminding us of who he is, I guess. I don't really see the whole point of that. And then Shivani and Tanay hype up the DDP Sting World title match, but they reveal on commentary that the Four Horsemen had attacked Perry Saturn and Billy Kidman ahead of their tag team match with the Armstrong Boys. As we hear the music play for Scott and Steve Armstrong as they're going to face Raven in a handicap match. Apparently it's Raven's rules.
Yep.
He's allowed to use a chair. There's no ref stoppage. What were your thoughts on this segment?
This match? It was weird.
Yeah.
That had no flow to it.
Yeah.
And I never understood handicap matches where it was the tag.
Where the two guys tag each other in and out.
I always like my favorite handicap matches when you get these two faces who are going to get their ass kicked by this monster heel, and then they're at and it's all three in the ring.
Like the big like Yokozuna squash type matches.
Absolutely. I fucking love that shit.
Yeah, or like Andre the Giant when he used to wrestle eight guys at once. Yeah.
I really, really enjoyed matches.
Those
like
are
that.
Fun, yeah.
But when the face has to do when it's two heels versus a baby face, those handicap matches always suck in my
really?
Opinion. I mean, sometimes you get a good one where it's like Stone Cold in the main event versus Vincent Shane McMahon or something like that for the title.
Yeah.
And the high stakes and everything like that. Yeah, it's been done right. But most of the time it's not.
So there wasn't a whole lot of build up to this.
Absolutely not. Okay. You can tell this was thrown together.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm just saying, historically speaking, in my opinion, was the babyface versus two heels handicap match. I know I'm not a big fan.
Okay. Raven would hit the even flow DDT on Scott Armstrong, goes for the cover, but Steve nails Raven with the chair and scores the pin. The Armstrongs get the win over Raven, so it's kind of building the odds stacking up against Raven because his partner's out of the picture and, you know, the Horsemen are the reason behind this. I will say, as I've gone back and watched some of these Nitros, this rivalry between Raven and Saturn, Billy Kidman and Rey Mysterio and the Horsemen was probably some of the best tag team wrestling during that time period when WCW and just wrestling in general didn't give a shit about tag team wrestling.
True.
So there's a match I would suggest you check out in the near future. Raven and Saturn against Benoit and Malenko from Spring Stampede 1999, which took place a few weeks before this Nitro that we're recapping. It's an outstanding tag team match. One of the best tag team matches I've seen in quite some time during that era. We got a split screen shot of Little Nate, Vice President Robinson, and Ric Flair on the phone as Flair is irate that Robinson's allowing Piper to run the show. He wants Piper arrested as the other inmates are goofing off in the background. So we're continuing this insane asylum goofiness pretty much where you stand before. It's dumb, but it's funny at the same time.
Now it's getting stale.
Okay.
The first segment, I got a chuckle. But the second segment, is that where we first saw Asia?
Quite possibly.
But anyway,
she's on this
in
this
show. Yeah, that's the first time we ever see her.
I believe so. This is probably like her debut on TV.
I thought she had potential, for the record.
But you have to admit, though. You have to admit, she was a beautiful, muscular woman that had masculine features at that time, and the name Asia definitely was a ripoff of China.
Totally.
Okay, I just want to clarify that.
I tell you what, though, it obviously China came first.
Yeah.
But call me crazy, but I think Asia would have made a better China. I just call me crazy on that.
You are crazy on that.
I really believe that.
Yeah. Okay.
I'll die on that hill.
Okay. Well, as you're continuing to die on that hill, Mean Gene's in the ring with WCW Vice President Charles Robinson, and Gene wants clarification over who's in charge in Flair's absence. Robinson assures that he's in charge and guarantees that we're going to see DDP and Sting for the world title. But Piper makes his way down to the ring, as you spoiled it earlier in your rant, and demands, and as Robinson demands security show up to arrest Piper. Piper insults Little Nate, who then slaps Piper, and then J.J. Dillon and security make their way to the ring, remove Piper from the building. But here's the weird part. This is where I call bullshit, right? So Piper, like, and this is, I can understand your confusion over this. Piper's the commissioner, so he claims he's in charge. Charles Robinson's the vice president. He claims he's in charge. Charles Robinson fires Roddy Piper during this segment, but then reminds everybody that, oh, you're still going to get to fight Flair at Slamboree for the presidency of WCW.
Yeah.
What was the point of firing him? It felt like there was too many cooks in the kitchen and nobody was really delegating the authority as to the fine details of this storyline.
I like
this angle.
That analogy. Yep.
So, like, which one is it? Is he getting hauled off in cuffs because he's fired, or is he going to wrestle Flair at the pay-per-view?
But here's the thing. This was and I'm assuming this is still the Vince Russo era.
No, this isn't.
No, sorry.
Bischoff.
Bischoff
and Nash, I think, were booking at this time.
They were just doing the old throw shit to the wall and see what sticks.
But you don't see this as maybe some kind of disorganization within the ranks of their creative?
That's okay. Yeah, totally.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. Overall that segment was okay. I mean, it served a purpose. It built some heat with Piper, but some confusion. He's fired, but he can still wrestle, kind of thing, which is weird. And then my favorite part of that whole segment, and I'm sure that you can get this reference, but Robinson is on the microphone screaming and he goes, "I'm Charles and I'm in charge." You can't tell me that wasn't a Scott Baio
Charles in Charge
reference.
Charles in Charge. Yeah.
Anyway, of our days and our nights.
It was such a great show. Banger theme.
The theme was pretty good. So yeah. The show was okay. Yeah. Scott Baio.
Yeah, Charles. Great memory. Yeah.
Scott Baio was Charles in Charge. Yeah. And then his little sidekick was what? Buddy Lembeck or something like that?
I have no idea.
Yeah, the little. I
forget. I was going to say Melissa Milano, but that's the other one. That's Who's the Boss?
Who's the Boss, yeah. All right, so here we are. Sting, Diamond Dallas Page, World Heavyweight Championship up next. Crowd's really super into it. I didn't realize how hot this crowd was in Fargo, North Dakota. It's either they've never had they don't get a whole lot of wrestling, or they were really anticipating seeing Sting and DDP.
Well, I've never been to North Dakota.
Same.
But I hear there's not much going on over there. So, and you can tell it was almost a sellout crowd. I thought it was at first, but then you can hear when they zoomed in on the camera, there's spots where
there's some seats empty. I mean, who knows? Maybe the guy could have been taking a shit or getting a hot dog or whatever. But, you know.
Yeah.
But overall, the match was outstanding. It's one of my favorite Sting matches of all time.
It was actually that should have been the main event.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah.
Definitely should have been the main event. Some highlights from that match included, it wasn't advertised as a no disqualification match, but it seemed like the referee was letting some things fly, and the announcers, they cover that and make note of that. Page delivered a low blow to Sting as he was dropping the fist in the corner on the second rope. The referee allowed it. Sting delivered a hard shoulder block to Page, taking him down. Then he bounced off the rope and then headbutted him in the nuggets, as you would refer to it as. That got a nice pop. Finish comes when Page attempts the diamond cutter, but Sting counters it into a scorpion death trap for the win. There was another thing too that I noticed from this match was that Sting tried to deliver a standard tombstone, but then Page countered it, and then Sting tried to deliver another one again, but then he lifted Page up and it looked like he was going to deliver a pile driver, but instead he almost pancaked him but dropped knees first. It was a reverse inverted tombstone. I don't know if you'd noticed that.
No, I totally missed
it. I thought he was going to drop Page on his head. But, outstanding match. Yep. One of my favorites. If you're listening out there, go out of your way to watch that match, if anything, on this episode of Nitro. Sting, Diamond Dallas Page for the world title. And it got some time, too. It got 18, 19 minutes with no commercial break, which was pretty cool. So go out of your way to watch that Sting, Diamond Dallas Page World Heavyweight Championship. Excellent match. Another segment here with Ric Flair and Charles Robinson on the phone from the Looney Bin. Flair is excited and decides that we're going to book Sting and Goldberg at Slamboree for the World Heavyweight title. What were your thoughts on the potential of that match being the headliner of the pay-per-view, because there was a lot of moving parts about certain matches on this pay-per-view.
I get that Goldberg is a main eventer and he's a draw. I think that match would have stunk.
Really?
I'm actually kind of glad.
I think Sting would have made it look good. He was such a pro. Yeah,
that's true.
There's all right. You know what? I want to prove you wrong here.
Yeah,
when it comes to that, okay?
Sure.
There's an episode of Nitro in the fall of '98. It took place the night after. I know the date. It just came to me. September 14th, 1998. Episode of Nitro. The main event: Goldberg defending the World Heavyweight Championship against Sting from the NWO Wolfpack. Aside from the finish. Pretty fun match.
Okay.
Go check it out.
All right.
Sting and Goldberg, September 14th, 98 Nitro. It was the same night that Ric Flair returned and reformed the Four Horsemen.
Historically speaking, Sting match, a great Sting match tells a story.
Yep.
And Sting is great at telling a story.
Yes.
I just didn't think that Goldberg was ever good at telling a story. And the Ultimate Warriors thing. Go to the ring, great entrance, yada, yada, yada.
Yep.
But then ding, ding, ding. If it goes past 5 minutes, you're not going to be enjoying this match.
And oh, yeah.
Anyway.
Goldberg's not long in the tooth for...
I think it would have been a clash of styles in a bad way.
Okay. All right. Well, like I said, I'm here to prove you wrong, so go check that out. Here was a match that was kind of disappointing for me. Rey Mysterio and Psicosis for the Cruiserweight Championship. Apparently, Psicosis had beaten Rey a week prior, but it was a solid... I mean, it was okay. It wasn't what we normally expect. The Benoit Malenko run-in kind of ruined it for me, but then Rey ends up picking up the title off of the distraction and regaining the Cruiserweight Championship. What were your thoughts on that?
Well, I you know what, now that you mention it, when I was just watching it and just be like, as a match, I didn't mind it. I thought it was okay.
Yeah.
But they were a victim of their own greatness. That we've seen Psicosis Rey Mysterio 1,000 times.
Yes.
That and we've seen them, I mean, like,
they put out bangers.
Holy fucking shit matches.
Yep.
So we had
ECW, WCW,
expectations were high, and I get what you mean by that. But that was the first time you ever, my opinion, that was the first time you ever saw those guys wrestling. Like, that was a pretty good match. But
if you don't know their history behind it.
Yeah, I mean, if you know their history, you're like, what the? Yeah, I get what you mean by that.
I get it. Totally get it. Next segment. Kevin Nash comes out, and he's not happy that he lost his title shot at Slamboree. Apparently, he was supposed to get the opportunity to face DDP. So, weirdly enough, he puts out a challenge for the title, and he wants both Goldberg and DDP involved in the match to make it a four-way. Why would you, as the challenger, want to add more odds and more mountains to climb to get the title?
I would get... his point, if the champion was the Giant, the Big Show, whatever the fuck, right?
Yep.
And then that guy's a monster. Why would you want to face him?
So you want a couple other guys in there to help soften him up.
Then you throw in fucking Brian Pillman in there.
Yeah.
Let's go, right?
Yep.
I would totally get it, but you're right. Why would you want another dude?
If he goes straight up against Sting, and then maybe like Robinson comes out and says, no, DDP's going to be involved, and then Goldberg comes out, and then they say, no, Goldberg's going to be involved too, then that's how you make the four-way. But Nash was the one that came up with the idea for the four-way, so I thought it was a little bit strange.
I'm with you 10,000%.
Okay. All right, good. I'm glad that you kind of caught that too. The match is pretty much... booked. Flair and Robinson on the phone at the Looney Bin again. Flair loves the idea of the four-way, tells Robinson to make it happen as the nut jobs in the background are having fun watching Nitro. Flair dances with that female muscular nurse, which turns out to be Asia.
And she was a fox. Fox may be a bad terminology, but for her...
You just want like chicks to like manhandle you, huh?
I do.
You're into that sort of thing?
I don't like to be in pain.
Are you like... Do you like bigger chicks?
No.
Okay.
No.
You want someone that's going to take some force.
Here's the thing. This is awful what I'm about to say, and I'm not going to mention any names. But anyway, I highly doubt she's listening to this podcast anyway. But once upon a time, I was dating this girl that was a lawyer, and I thought it was the hottest thing in the world. Dating a lawyer. But her genetics weren't the greatest. So now it's time to get
happy. Like you're fucking Jack Blaine or something.
I'm not trying to say. Now it's time. It's happy times. We've been dating a couple months. It's red. It's time. I'm at her house. Let's do it, right?
Yep.
So,
she's ready to put you over?
Yeah. She's naked. The lie detector wasn't going up, brother. Yep, that's what I realized. I can date all the good people I want, but I can't boink them. I have to be physically attracted to you to boink you.
All right. Yeah. Let's move on here. I don't know how we're going to do that, but Eric Watts didn't realize he was employed with WCW at this time, facing Bam Bam Bigelow.
Loss, right?
And I'm glad that match was pretty short, because Bigelow made short work of Watts with the greetings from Asbury Park.
I never saw Bam Bam do that finisher before. That was a hell of a finish.
Yeah.
I like that finish.
It is kind of neat, yeah? It's like almost like a sit-down tombstone kind of thing. Amazing. Yeah,
I really like that finish.
It was pretty cool. Up next, Mean Gene interviews new WCW champion Sting, which, by the way, he repainted his face, which means he's probably accepting the challenge that Nash made for the four-way if he's going to repaint his face, because he knows he's still got work to do. I mean, if I wasn't accepting it, I wasn't putting the paint fucking back on, unless you walk around with paint on your face all day. But, I mean, it is wrestling after all, so.
For the record,
What's
the deal with fucking WCW at the time, double booking, triple booking, all these wrestlers? You have this fucking huge roster. You don't have to have fucking these guys wrestle five times a night. It's fucking bananas.
I get it. Like, yeah, there was multiple segments where Sting was involved. I mean, let's face it. Sting was probably the most popular guy that whole night on the show. I mean, that crowd was into him. Like, when he won that title, it felt like you watched like a memorable pay-per-view match. So bringing him out, I think, wasn't necessarily going to hurt. But I get what you're saying. They got a whole roster full of guys. And, I mean, Jericho wasn't even working. And he was still under contract.
I'm gonna say,
you couldn't find a spot for Jericho on that show?
I'm not talking about just this one spot in general.
I know. I get it. I get what you're saying. In general, they did that all the time.
It made no sense to me.
Yeah. So, Sting accepts the challenge for the four-way because he's the babyface, and that's what the babyfaces do, you know? Like, sure, why not? I'm a fighting champion. Yeah. I'll fight three guys because I'm the hero, you know? Like, yeah. Okay, so that's official. Main event, Sting, Page, Goldberg, Nash, four-way for the title. First pinfall wins. Go to commercial, and we're back from the break, and it's our boy Haku Ming.
Fucking love him.
Making his way to the ring to take on WCW TV champ Booker T. What did you think of the match?
It wasn't the greatest match ever.
Solid.
Seen. Yeah, solid. This is what I thought, though. Because, like, I know that it was kind of rememberable having Scott Steiner versus Booker T when they had the championship runs, you know what I mean?
Yep.
I would have loved to have seen Haku versus or Ming versus Booker T. Have them have an angle, the unstoppable Ming versus the up-and-comer champion Booker T. And Booker T obviously goes over. I think that would have just made more credibility to his champion.
Okay, that's not a bad idea. Like, if, like, let's say, like, Ming had like a manager and a mouthpiece to kind of let him loose on, like, you know, the roster or whatever, and then maybe he sets his sight on Booker, and Booker's got to, you know, fight back and, you know, deal with this monster. I mean, I like that idea. I would have gotten behind that. I definitely would have gotten behind that. Stevie Ray gets involved with the slapjack. So it looks like we're getting towards maybe a Harlem Heat reunion. Did you kind of see that there?
I thought it was more like because of the intrigue of brother versus brother, I thought that was more like, I'm taking the belt off you, not no one else.
Okay. All right. I could see that. I could definitely see that. And then Rick Steiner gets involved because he thinks that Booker is in cahoots with Stevie and behind the attack. What was your take on Rick Steiner's involvement?
I couldn't care less.
Okay.
But I get what you're saying by that.
Here's what I also noticed. It took place in this segment, and it took place in a prior segment that we didn't really discuss, but I thought I would share this, and I don't know if you noticed this as well, but during some of these segments, Mike Tenay would plug the hotline. Like, anybody gave a fuck in the middle of, you're taking away from what we're trying to watch. Like, it's one thing if you designated a segment to the hotline, but you have it in the middle of an angle that you're trying to get across. Why the fuck do you expect people to care about calling this 900 number during the middle of an angle?
I'll double down.
Unless there was something on the hotline that was connected to that angle. But all it was Mike Tenay was like, yeah, call the hotline right now. 1-900-909-9900. You can get all the news and scoops from the world of WCW and professional wrestling. Like, as Booker T is getting fucking his shit kicked in. and Stevie Ray's jump. You know what I mean? Like, it just didn't, it felt out of place.
I want to double down real quick on that.
Okay.
I don't think I ever expressed my opinion on Mike Tenay on this podcast. I think he's one of the worst announcers in the history of the business.
I think he's one of the worst play-by-play announcers. I think he's a good color commentator. Play-by-play is different than color commentating. Yeah. Play-by-play, you're pretty much leading the ship, okay? You're the one calling all the shots. And that wasn't his strong suit. But color commentary, being able to throw in them little nerdy factoids about the luchadors and all the other stuff, that was more his wheelhouse.
That's just
my opinion.
I just didn't like his voice. I didn't like that his personality. You could tell it wasn't, like, evasive. So when he, like, was trying to make a point, it was, like, him really forcing it out, you know what I mean? Or, like, Shivani had to stop, be like, wink, it's your turn.
Okay.
Anyway, I obviously.
You don't like him.
I don't like him.
Okay.
Don't like
him. All right, fair enough. I mean, you can't like everybody. We get a Kevin Nash video package with Wolfpack theme music, I guess, in case someone's just flipping the channel and has never watched wrestling before, and we find out, you know, who this guy is. God forbid. You know, usually I think most people that flip the channel to watch wrestling kind of have an idea of who's who, but I thought this Wolfpack video package was a little out of place.
All right.
Next segment is a pre-recorded segment from Dr. James Andrews, the orthopedic surgeon doing the work on Hulk Hogan and his knee injury, and Bischoff brings Hogan to the clinic, and he's telling Hogan that it's probably best that you get the surgery, and that Nash and the Wolfpack are going to take care of Paige. So we kind of still have some NWO association there. Bischoff had been out of the picture for a little while. He was kind of brought back in here, although they've been positioning Hogan as this baby face, which has been kind of weird. What was your take on the whole segment itself?
It was okay.
Yeah.
That we need Hogan. Oh my God, do we need Hogan? Look, I've never. You're the Hogan mark, not me. But, by the way,
I'm gonna cut you off for a minute here. I saw this last night as I was scrolling through on social media, but Hulk Hogan announced that he's gonna be doing a appearance at a sports convention in New York City at the Javits Center in August. And I think I'm going to go. I think this is the closest that Hogan is in the area, being in Connecticut. Yeah. I'm going to spend a few bucks to go meet Hulk Hogan and get that one checked off my bucket list. Yeah.
That's cool.
It's a 3-day convention. There's like other athletes like Tom Brady, Derek Jeter, lots of big, it's like a lot of huge, big name athletes. Yeah. So, and Hogan's been advertised to be there. It doesn't say what date he's going to be there and how much it's going to cost to meet him. It's like a $50 general admission ticket to go, which isn't too bad. But then to meet him will cost more. I'm sure there's, tiered pricing, $300 to rub his Fu Manchu, another $450 to fucking, shine his bald spot, wear his bandana, maybe share the same tanning oil he wears, who the fuck knows.
Yeah.
But I'm going to go meet my hero. I'm going to make it a point. I think Daryl's going to go too. I think we're going to make it a little family affair. But nonetheless, Hogan in this segment here with Bischoff, I liked it because you know what it brought to me? It reminded me of like when a professional athlete gets injured and they show the footage of him going to the rehab and the doctor and the surgery and then the surgeon, James Andrews, who was a well-known orthopedic surgeon, he's worked on hundreds of thousands of athletes, a lot of pro wrestlers too. He's done work on Triple H and other big names in wrestling to break down the details of the severity of Hogan's injury. It reminded me of like a video package you would see on like an ESPN or like a sports pregame show where they're detailing the player's injury. It brought a little credibility to the wrestling product. I don't know about you. What were your thoughts on
that? Just to show Hogan like I love Sting and Savage and yada yada yada, right? But this, oh my God, this era of WCW needs Hogan so bad.
Back then, 25 years ago, I remember a lot of people didn't want Hogan on the show, and they wanted to move on to like newer names and fresher names. And I felt like during this time period,
Hogan, I thought it was NWO. NWO, what's that cliche with trades? You want to trade the guy. Anyway, you get the gist.
No, I don't actually.
Anyway, there's like a thing where we have a player. and he's aging, right? Yep. You want to get rid of him before he goes falls off the hill. But you know. Oh my God, I'm choking on a pressure. But I would say I did think everyone got sick of NWO, not Hogan.
Okay. That's fair.
So give us a new angle of Hogan. You know what I mean?
Okay, that's fair.
This show, it screams unorganization.
Yes.
It screams we're just throwing shit on
yep.
on a wall to see what sticks.
Yep.
When you had the NWO, you had Hogan. It was on lockdown. You had organization. You know what you wanted.
Yeah.
You know what it's gonna how it started. You know what's gonna end.
You know the people Hogan need to hear you in the microphone. Yeah. You throw it all over the place.
It's
practically in my fucking backyard.
I do have a voice that carries. So.
Yes, it does for sure. That's for certain.
Yeah.
But I get what you're saying. Maybe the NWO stuff was a little stale, and I felt like there was some limbo with the NWO because you had this black and white group that was kind of like looked at as like B-teamers that were being taken advantage of, but then like there was issues with Hogan and Nash. Steiner was off on his own, you know, little world. It just felt like there was some disarray, and I think they were trying to put an end to it. At least how I look back in hindsight, that they were trying to bring some finality, and maybe this group was going to fall apart and everyone's going to go their separate ways, but that never happened. Another segment, the Looney Bin, with Flair and Robinson on the phone as Robinson books Steiner versus Booker T, Rick Steiner, for the TV title at Slamboree, and Flair tells him to make the main event four-way a no DQ match. Now, here's the most interesting part of this segment, okay, out of all the Looney Bin segments. You know, Flair's dancing with the others in the Looney Bin, but we get a shot of Scott Hall in the Looney Bin.
I totally missed it.
You missed that?
I totally missed that.
So Flair's dancing with all the fucking rest of them in the nut house, and he kind of turns around. All of a sudden, Scott Hall's there, and he's got the bandana backwards with the toothpick in his mouth, and he's wearing like the long, you know, like the doctor's like scrub.
Yeah.
Right? And Flair and the other guys in the Looney Bin do like Hall's like signature taunt with his fingers, like the ooh, like, you know?
Yeah.
And Hall just takes the toothpick and fucking throws it, and then he's out of the shot.
I totally missed that.
And you missed that?
I'm about to rock the piss last night or something. I don't know. I totally missed it.
Well, you did a great job recapping. Yeah. And so that to me was very intriguing because it was like, And from what I recall, nothing ever really went anywhere with that.
Yeah.
It was just like almost like a little hidden Easter egg that like they threw out there, and it could have gone in like any different type of direction. Yeah. So I was a little taken aback that they didn't expand upon that, but it was WCW at the time. So throwing shit at the wall and seeing if it sticks. Maybe it didn't stick in their mind, but it was interesting. I was like, ooh, what's he doing in there? Oh, we're going to see Scott Hall, because he hadn't been on TV for months.
Yeah.
So it was like, oh, we're going to see him return. Ooh, okay, maybe we'll see how this goes. Four-way hardcore match up next. Horace Hogan, Mikey Whipwreck, Brian Knobbs, and Hack. This is pretty much plunder and weapons and debauchery and everything you would expect in a hardcore match from 1999. Your thoughts?
I thought it was awful.
Okay.
I thought every WCW hardcore match was awful. I remember when they... that, of course, Sandman and all these other guys. I remember the worst hardcore match I've ever seen with them was Sandman versus Kevin Nash. Yeah, that was the worst hardcore
oh, really?
Match I've ever seen.
I didn't
seen
even know them. They had that. I'll have to watch that.
Look it up. I think it was on a Random Thunder, if I remember.
That probably correctly. Makes sense. That sounds like something you put on a
awful,
Thunder.
Brother. Oh, yeah. My God. It was awful.
We should probably recap some Thunders one of these days.
I would hate it. It's so shitty. That
yeah.
It's
okay. Yeah, maybe we'll do that. We'll just recap some random episodes of Thunder.
But anyway, I hated it. Obviously, they're trying to capture the magic of ECW, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
When they announced WWF, when they had a hardcore match, it kind of sucked. But when they had a hardcore match that was like the Rock versus Stone Cold, whatever, and they're just hitting each other with chairs and stuff like that, that normally were banger matches.
Yeah.
Well,
it's probably the participants.
That's true. That's good.
Yeah.
Actually, that you hit the nail right.
It's probably. I'm just saying. I'm 100% certain. But I will say, when the WWF, introduced that hardcore division, I was a teenager, so I was excited to see that stuff because it brought a little bit of that ECW flavor to it that I didn't get a chance to see because it wasn't either available in my area or it was on at 4:30 in the fucking morning when I sleep like a normal person. I enjoyed some of those hardcore matches. There were certain guys that like helped develop some personalities. Al Snow, Road Dogg, I think had a little bit of run with the hardcore title, which was fun. But my favorite of all time was the Crash Holly 24/7 segments when he was the hardcore champion.
Fun.
You know, at the circus or at the Fun Time Chuck E. Cheese or at the airport. Like, those were a lot of fun. And it gave, you know, a lot of these like lower to mid card guys a significant or a meaningful role on the show. You know, instead of just like kind of like it. The Crash Holly segments for me back then as a teenager was like must see TV. Like, I just loved it.
I kind of agree with you. I really do.
I thought they were hilarious.
Yeah.
Moving on here. Big Papa Pump is ready for his match with Macho Man. He brings out Gorgeous George. Savage comes out with Gorgeous George, and Steiner insists that, you know, if I beat you, I'm going to take your girl. Charles Robinson shows up. He's the referee. Bell rings. They lock up. Steiner shoves Savage into Robinson. Robinson calls DQ. Savage loses. Steiner retains.
I tell you what, I actually think that was the best outcome, whatever.
Really?
Oh, absolutely. We're ready now at this point. We're just ready for the fucking main event.
You're over it.
And did anyone really want to watch fucking... I love Savage. And believe it or not...
I was not a fan.
You're going to fall off your chair when I say this. There's actually some single matches where Scott Steiner actually enjoyed.
I believe it.
That being said,
I was a big Papa Pump guy.
I was not going to hate this match, but when it happened, boom, disqualification. I'm like, good, just get on to the main event. Let's go. I was happy.
I mean, I'll be honest with you. I'm a big Steiner Brothers guy.
Yep. Me too. I love the Steiner Brothers.
Big Papa Pump, I liked how he transformed into that, and he was really coming into his own during this time period. This version of Randy Savage, I was not really thrilled with. I didn't really care for this. This felt like, to me, in 1999, this felt like Savage was an old guy trying to be cool again.
I think he was just collecting a check.
Yeah.
That was it.
And I love Randy Savage. He's my top two. Him and Hulk Hogan. Mega powers. You know, I got the fucking toys right here on the table. You know, they're in this ring too. You know, Savage, like, they are my two guys. My one and 1A.
I wish the audience could see this. Your setup is amazing.
I've taken pictures before, but I might do a little updated version because, you know, I've added some more toys to the mix.
You might be your figurines. You might be close to 1,000. It's getting there.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see.
I don't know. It's at least a couple hundred.
Yeah, there's a few.
It's pretty cool.
There's quite a few. There's quite a few. I've actually slowed down lately because of some financial reasons, of course, you know, being married and stuff like that, but you know, I'll get back on the horse again. I have a list of toys that I would like to add to this collection here, and maybe someday when I die I'll leave it for somebody to, you know, one of my relatives or my nieces or whatever, money to, you know, sell them off and, you know,
saying,
keep the money for yourself.
Lord that gives you a healthy life and you die natural causes. I tell you what,
I'm knocking on wood.
By that time, these motherfuckers are gonna be quite the coin, brother.
They could very well be. They could very well be. That's for sure. Let's move on here. What do we got next?
I think it's the main event. Yeah.
Oh, we get a vignette of Gorgeous George training with Medusa.
Oh, I tell you what.
That was kind
of
neat.
I'm assuming that she was a porn star. I don't know nothing. I know of her. Yeah, that she had the match with Charles Robinson. She won at the pay-per-view. I remember that. But, like, I don't remember her background or, like, her story. She was very forgettable. But, man, she was a smoke show.
Yes, she was.
She was a smoke
show. Yeah, she was a good-looking chick.
Little tight little shorts. I appreciated that.
She was definitely a good-looking chick. I actually saw a shoot interview once with her where she disclosed, or maybe it was a Dark Side of the Ring, I don't remember, but she disclosed what it was like living with Randy Savage and how, like, he used to have cameras in the house and, like, she couldn't leave without his, like, he was super paranoid.
They were an item, huh?
They were a real deal item, and I had heard some stories that there was possibly a domestic issue that took place that, you know, led to them splitting up, but who knows? I don't like to speculate too much on that. But let's move on. It's main event time. Fatal, you know, four-way, four corners match, WCW title. It's Kevin Nash, Diamond Dallas Page, Goldberg, and Sting facing off. What'd you think of this match?
I think it should have been reversed. I think that should have been the 9 o'clock match. And like Sting would have been, I got screwed, blah, blah, blah. I want Diamond Dallas Page right now. Whatever the fuck, right? That was such a great moment. Like the crowd pop, everyone's happy. And then we get this fucking shit. I don't know,
bro. It was, yeah, like you said, it probably would have been better if Sting and Paige closed the show and you had that moment. Maybe at the end, Goldberg and Nash come out and they declare their intentions. Maybe it sets up a four-way for the pay-per-view. Yeah. But Savage coming out and helping Paige win was a little weird, too. Savage was kind of like a wild card in all of this. And so, like, he was either a good guy against Flair, but he was a bad guy with Paige. Like, it just felt kind of weird. But overall, what did you know?
It wasn't a terrible match.
It wasn't terrible. It was pretty
entertaining.
But it wasn't.
I just thought it should have been in reverse.
Yeah.
Like book this match, like, last segment of Nitro the week before. Get all four of them in. Then you have the Randy run in and all that sort of stuff. And then Sting goes to Piper or Robinson and goes, I got screwed. You saw that.
Yeah.
I want a match now or I'm going to kick the shit out of you. Whatever the fuck. All right, Sting, don't hurt me.
Yeah.
And then have Sting win the title. I think that should have been. Anyway.
Okay. That's interesting.
Yeah.
That's interesting, yeah. But overall, what did you think of this episode of Nitro?
If I'm a teacher, I'll grade it a C+.
Okay, that's fair. I was going to say B minus C plus, just based on the fact that Sting Diamond Dallas Page match was awesome. Like I said, one of my favorite matches of all time of Sting's and DDP's too.
As much as I kind of, it's my verbiage on this whole thing, you probably thought, said to yourself, Dennis, you thought C plus, you thought this was like diarrhea.
Here's no, I don't thing. Think it's diarrhea at C plus.
No, what I'm trying to say is that I was entertained at all the time. I just thought the Sanus item stuff was poor acting. I didn't believe. One second, do you actually believe they're in the Sanus item? No, of course not.
There seemed to be a consistent common thread that, like, there was chaos and there was confusion over who was in control of the show. That seemed to be the most common thread, and that it involved these particular players. Although the weird challenge that Nash put out, you know, I want the title, but you can fight for it too, and so can you. And why don't we all just fight for it? You want a title shot? You want a title? Everybody gets a title shot. It's like fucking Oprah giving out cars. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like that was the only weird thing about it. But overall, I would probably agree with you. B minus C plus. If you're listening, go out of your way. Sting DDP from the April 26, 1999 episode of Nitro, an outstanding match.
Totally agree.
One of my favorites. Of Sting's and DDP's. If there's a Mount Rushmore, that match is making both of their Mount Rushmores, in my opinion. Let's move on, because over on the other channel, this is Monday Night Raw, Raw's War, same evening.
Night right after Backlash.
Night after the Backlash pay-per-view, emanating from Hartford, Connecticut. I was in attendance at this Raw. This is the very first WWF televised event that I'd ever attended. I'd seen house shows and non-TVs and things like that, and I'd been to a bunch of those as a kid, but this is the first time I was actually going to go, and I was going to be on TV.
Yeah. How good were your seats?
My seats were not that good.
Okay.
So if you're watching Raw... And you're watching from the hard camera.
Yeah.
We were in the second level, section 225, so you couldn't see us at all. But I still had a great time.
Yeah.
Me and two of my buddies from high school, we got tickets. And I was a Rock guy. One of my friends was a Stone Cold guy, even though I still like Stone Cold. Yeah. I was more of a Rock guy. Then I had another friend of mine that... was a Ken Shamrock fan, like a huge Ken Shamrock fan.
Oh, me too.
So we had a sign that said, like, Raw is War. And, like, my friend Kevin at the time, he's no longer with us. May he rest in peace. Kevin's mother made us this big, like, sign that said Raw is War. She, like, printed out the, like, a picture on the internet with the logo. And then had, like, our names, you know, like, under, you know, and our favorite wrestlers underneath the name. So it was like a picture of The Rock, and it had Dave, and it was pretty cool. So we like all held up the poster board. There might be like one point in the show where like you could see out of the corner like us with this big white poster board during like I think maybe like the opening segment with The Rock, which we'll get into right now. Rock comes out, starts things off, and you know, discusses what took place at Backlash. Oh, no, before we get to that, we get a limo arriving with Vince and the Stooges, and Vince looking dejected as he heads into the arena because his daughter had been abducted by The Undertaker the night before. Where to, Stephanie?
And oh, then, yeah. But before we commence.
All right.
I swear to God. How do I know if I died and went to heaven? If I wake up, I'm in a package store. For some reason, I think package stores, not more of a pothead than I am an alcoholic. Anyway, that being said, I love package stores. I love how greasy they are and how fun they are. You look at everything. But anyway,
yeah, how are we getting to this?
Of the spectrum, if I died and went to hell, I know waking up to listen to that Stephanie McMahon scream. I can't fucking take that bitch's scream. It got oh my God, I can't. Stephanie McMahon.
So you mean it's so let me ask you something.
More in a bad way. That scream is awful.
Okay, so yes, it could sound pretty awful, but I mean that's probably the better acting than what we saw on Nitro. Is it not? All right, let me put it to you like this.
Yeah.
You think her screaming is worse? You like greasy rundown liquor stores? Like you haven't seen worse than anything any of those?
But I'm just saying,
all the degenerates that go in there to fucking get their fix and then try to, you know, think they're gonna win the lotto.
Well, you got mad at me for leaping. We'll get there when we get there. But the scream, oh my God.
Alright, I get it. Alright. I get it. I get it. We will discuss that at length. Show opens with The Rock. Pretty much, you know, not happy that he's not the champion.
Yeah.
Still got some issue with Steve Austin, but he's blaming it all on Shane McMahon. And Shane McMahon was the guest referee of the main event the night before.
Yeah.
Which then eventually leads to some words between the two, and then some physicality. Triple H and China of the corporation attacked The Rock, and it's pretty much a corporation beatdown, and we get the match made for later in the night, The Rock, Shane McMahon. Share with me your thoughts on that opening segment.
Not bad. We got where we wanted. So okay. He made a point that he made a point why he was frustrated, and then they booked the match. We got the main.
Rock was kicked out of the corporation.
Yep.
He's now a babyface. I think that was a long time coming, if you remember, because they were still cheering him even though he was a bad guy.
It's hard to cheer against the Rock.
Even, you know, it's funny you say that because even now, like more recently with WrestleMania, you know, he got a lot of heat against Cody, and there were some cities that he came into and they were booing him. And I was like, oh, this is great.
Yeah.
But then there were other times where they were chanting Rocky, Rock. Like, for instance, I know you haven't watched the first night of WrestleMania, but the main event with him and Roman against Cody and Seth, they were kind of booing Cody a little bit and they were cheering Rock. I don't know if they were booing Cody because I don't know why, but it's like you said, it's hard not to cheer The Rock because of how entertaining he is. I mean, even as a bad guy, he's pretty damn entertaining. But nonetheless, we are off to the races. Rock and Shane McMahon booked, finally pulling the trigger on a babyface turn. Jim Cornette sitting in for Jerry Lawler.
I love Jim Cornette.
I know, you jerk off the Jim Cornette podcast. I know, I get it.
This night, he fucking sucked. He was terrible.
He's not a color guy.
He was awful.
That's not his. He's a mouthpiece, you know, in other areas. But this calling the action, no.
Him and TNA both the fill-ins. They were awful.
Yeah, that's right. This is a night of fill-ins. Yep. I think
night of bad acting. And if night I am, of
if I'm not mistaken, I believe Lawler was not present at this episode of Raw because he was filming Man on the Moon. With Jim Carrey.
Great movie. That's a terrific movie.
Yeah, it is a good movie. It is a really good movie. Go out of your way to watch that too, Man on the Moon. Jim Carrey. Backstage, the Stooges suggest to Vince that he call the cops, but Vince refuses.
Of course.
It's because he's going to do this the Undertaker's way.
Yeah.
And he's got paperwork for him to sign. But they don't really necessarily elaborate on what that paperwork is. So there's a little bit of a mystery there, which I'm okay with. You know, they're giving us little crumbs along the way. Go to commercial. We're back from the break. They're waiting for the Undertaker's phone call. Shane and the corporation, they're also backstage getting ready for The Rock. And then the opening match is the Brood taking on Kane and X-Pac.
Here's the weirdest fucking thing I've ever saw in my life.
You know what, though? As a kid, I used to love to...
Is this you being a reckless speculator again?
No. Okay. Me being a reckless speculator.
Okay.
This is me trying to... why would they do this type of thing? But anyway, I used to love the DX, the intro. Mm-hmm. But man, as an adult now, it's so disorienting. But anyway.
Okay.
Here we go. X-Pac goes to the ring. It was his entrance.
His music got cut off, right?
Yeah.
What? It's probably just an error.
But here's the thing: he does his little choppies, and the X goes.
Well, he's got a key.
Up again. I never saw anything like that before. I thought,
there's these things called mistakes. Sometimes they happen.
I actually thought the way it was,
because you've run a wrestling show before.
I actually thought that was on purpose. They literally cut it right before he does his little choppies and stuff like that, and
his crotch chop with the pyro.
The pyro, and then he restarted. I thought that was the strangest thing about something.
I think it was probably just a production technical error.
The timing just seemed like it was planned. It was really weird.
Yeah. This match overall, nothing special, right?
Nothing special.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. There isn't really too much.
No. There was something special. And if I was Kane, I'd be mad too. So here we go. So after the match, the Brood attacks Kane.
Mm-hmm.
X-Pac is looking right down at him and doing nothing. And just chilling, going, "Oh, Kane's getting his ass kicked. What should I do?" And then the lights go back out. Brood goes running away. Kane beats the shit out of him. Absolutely, I would have done the same thing. Dave, I love you to death. But
well, thanks for
if
that.
If two guys were jumping you, and I'm standing, am I standing and going, "Oh, poor Dave, I ain't gonna do shit." When those guys are done, you better punch me in the face. Yeah, that was.
You're also forgetting too. It was a bloodbath. The lights were out, so X-Pac can't see.
No, you could. It was like the red thing.
The real red lights flickering.
Jim Cornette oh my god! And we got to mention this just
Jim
real
Ross.
Quick. Jim Ross is Bell Posse. My heart goes out to him. It was really bad that night.
Came back too. So,
I know. Just God bless him. And fuck you, Ed Ferrer. But anyway. I'm serious. That was the worst.
I know you are.
That's the worst angle in the history of the business, in my opinion. But anyway,
you'll find something else.
But he's looking right down. Well, it's where I double down.
Give it the next episode.
Watch it again. X-Pac is looking at Kane getting his ass kicked, and we got nothing. But anyway.
Well, Kane was not thrilled that X-Pac didn't get the bloodbath, and he did, so he chokeslammed X-Pac, that was the end of that segment.
Yep.
And more continuation of their rocky relationship, no pun intended. Vince is backstage with the Stooges again, waiting for the Undertaker's phone call. Go to commercial break. We come back from the break, and during the commercial, Vince is on the phone with the Undertaker. Taker tells Vince that she's fine. And Vince is like, "She better be fine, goddammit." And Vince says, "I got the paperwork, pal. Controlling interest. Everything you asked for. But I just want Stephanie back." And the Undertaker says that, "Vince, if you slip up, you won't see Stephanie." He wants the documents delivered to him at the loading dock of the hotel. And he wants Stone Cold Steve Austin to deliver them, and then hangs up. What was your take on that whole twist there with Austin now being shoved into the mix?
Obviously, it's a trap at this point.
Yeah.
I just didn't get why he wanted Austin. Maybe just to have everyone jump him, soften him up for the championship match, and get on with it. But
okay, but you answered your question.
Yeah, I just didn't. I just thought Vince, he could have done enough of a job to be a mule, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, he was originally going to do it, and then he was like, "I can't get Austin to do that because of their history." And then the next segment, Steve Austin comes out. Vince pleads with him, begs him, "You know, this, I get it. We got history, and this is personal, you know, but I really need your help. Can you help me?" And Austin, don't forget what Vince did to him, and pretty much told him, "No, I'm not going to help you. You can go kiss my ass."
You know what they should have did? The personal touch. I think if they really really thought this angle out, I think in the the McMahons are evil. Linda was always kind of the voice of reason, like the nicer one, right? In this instance,
she was nice to have all this comeback.
I've Stephanie in the weeks prior to this going to Stone Cold. "I have you back, man. You are an asset to this to our company. Yada yada yada." Have her be like the good guy. Have a reason why. If she, when she gets kidnapped by the Undertaker, that Stone Cold wouldn't just be like, oh, I'm just being a good person. I actually have invested interest to save her. She's nice to me. She does have my interest. That's the one McMahon
okay.
that I do care about.
Okay, I'm that's interesting.
To save her because she is a good person. She has my back.
Okay, that's interesting. I get that. But let me ask you this question.
Yeah.
Do you think that goes against the core values of the character that is Steve Austin? Because he doesn't trust anybody and he doesn't care about anybody but himself.
But here's the thing like every vigilante movie, right? It yep. always starts, I don't trust anybody. Open yeah. up, you know. But then Batman falls in love, and then he opens up a little bit.
Okay.
I think that could have been that little. I don't know.
So if they kind of planted some seeds between the two of them, where she she kind of approaches him and says I get it, you have issues with my dad, but I understand what you mean to this company XYZ and blah blah. Okay. I
didn't think of anything other than being a baby face. I got to save. Anyway, I guess I'm jumping again. I'm sorry.
No. Yeah. I get it. Yeah. I understand. Backstage, Vince is with the Stooges and says he's going to deliver the documents himself. And the Stooges warn him to be careful. And this begins the hour-long wait at the loading dock, which actually was in the building. They didn't go to no fucking hotel. It was in the building. I think he even said, Undertaker was you need to meet at the Grand Shire Hotel. I don't even think that was a hotel in Hartford at the time, if I'm not mistaken.
I never heard that.
I think it was a Radisson, like a Holiday Inn, a Marriott. What's that real nice one that's next to Max's in downtown? The Goodwin?
Yeah, the Goodwin.
The Goodwin, right? Yeah. I stayed there once. It wasn't bad. I don't remember hearing a Grand Shire Hotel, unless it was some fucking rundown dump motel, on the Berlin Turnpike. Yeah. Who knows? Hey. But up next, D'Lo Brown, Val Venus. We get some clips from the previous episode of Sunday Night Heat as we see Nicole Bass saving Val Venus and expressing her desire for his sly trombone to sit in her brass section.
Oh.
I always thought this was a weird little pairing here.
To say the least. The only thing
I liked Val Venus because of all the girls he used to hang out with. But I wasn't going to be liking Val Venus if he was going to be getting manhandled by Nicole Bass. But she's probably your kind of chick, right?
No.
Okay. Well, you said you like to get roughed around a little bit.
No. I like women looking like women.
Okay.
Much. Yeah, right.
She had very masculine features.
Yes, especially in the face. The only thing I like about that match, I always loved the what's D'Lo's finisher called?
The Sky High.
I love that finisher. And
he got it for the win.
And talking about Nicole Bass and the looks, the only thing that got me was Jim Ross. He goes.
She's somewhat attractive to some folks.
And then Jim Cornette goes, "Are you fucking stupid?"
And JR's like, well, she might be somewhat attractive. That was the line of the whole segment
right there.
She's, folks, she's somewhat attracted to some, she's somewhat attracted to some folks. And Cornette's like, somewhat? He's like, well, I mean, come on, I thought that was great. JR acknowledging that, she wasn't the most
popular. It's true, actually. Anyway.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're one of them, right?
No.
I mean, I'll say this, D'Lo, Val, if they got some more time, it probably would have been a really good match.
Yeah.
Both worked really well together.
What they gave us wasn't bad. It was good.
It wasn't bad. Austin's backstage walking around. He bumps into Big Show, and Big Show says, it's the guy's daughter, man. And Austin's like, I don't give a rat's ass who it is. And then he walks off. We go to commercial break. We come back, and it's the New Age Outlaws and badass Billy Gunn saying that he's here to remind Triple H where he came from and that he's going to get the job done correctly. And you kind of see Road Dogg looking at him like, huh? And JR referencing X-Pac losing to Triple H the night before at the pay-per-view. So we're kind of seeing whatever's left of DX really splintering off.
I got a question for you.
Okay, I might have an answer, but go ahead.
I tried to look it up, but I couldn't find it.
Okay.
So Triple H's theme, we're watching the new Peacock era.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a generic.
Yeah, number. They hadn't.
What was his regular? That actually is.
No, he was in between. They were trying to develop something for him.
Yeah.
So they kind of just gave him this generic kind of theme. And then I believe at one time, because he was with the corporation, they were having him use the corporation music for a little bit. So he was in between theme songs.
I was wondering if that was a copyright thing or
That was a WWF produced theme. Okay. It was just something very basic and just for the time being to kind of get him off of the DX theme song here as I drop my phone with all my notes. But the match itself with Billy, I thought it was probably the best story told, the best match with a story told out of the whole broadcast. Working on Billy's knee and the history with DX, and they were really kind of emphasizing, although there was one point in the match where Billy was really selling the knee, and then he made a comeback, and he was walking around like nothing happened to him, and then I think he forgot.
Yeah.
He was like, oh, shit, I got to sell the knee, and he rolled back out to the floor and started limping, and that was where the finish came when China slammed him into the pole.
Right in front of the fucking ref.
Right in front of the ref. Ref saw it, but apparently they were, you know, they were, you know, letting the rule book throw out the window that night. Road Dogg shows up. Him and China are going at it a little bit on the outside, arguing, and then Hunter delivers the pedigree for the win. But what are your thoughts? I thought this, even though it was short, it was the, with what we got, it was the best match on the show.
Other than, it really pissed me off where I hate when refs are fucking stupid. It, when China literally grabs them, the ref's just looking right at him. Triple H, at least bear hug the ref and be like, turn him around or something.
Or shove the referee out of the way, you know?
Terrible psychology.
The timing was not good.
Yeah, anyway, other than that, I'd like that match. I did.
Yeah, I thought it was the best match with a real story told.
You might be right.
He worked on a body part, you know? Like, for the most part, everything was like, you know, the other matches were like, you know, just quick, fast, you know, let's get to the finish kind of thing. But that was this era of WWE at the time. Shane McMahon's backstage. He's rallying the troops, getting ready for the big tag match with Mankind and the Bossman against Mankind and Big Show against Bossman and Test. But as Test leaves, he whispers something to the big boss man's ear. So looks like we're kind of seeing, you know, maybe another exile from the corporation. And the match takes place. Nothing really to write home about. Big Show and Mankind defeat the Boss Man and Test. Boss Man kind of throwing Test to the wolves and then turning on him at the end. What was your thought on that match?
I actually thought Boss Man and Test had chemistry. There was a point in the match the big Boss Man like did something to one of the opponents. I forgot. I think it was Mankind. It got him distracted, and Tex kind of like hit him, and then tagged him in, and it was like just the way that segment was hard to explain, but it was like a chemistry there. They had something. I wish I saw more Tex and Big Boss Man. I know that might sound crazy.
They had chemistry.
At least in that moment, right then, there was like a little chemistry there, and I kind of wish I saw more Big Boss Man and Tess. I really mean that.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. I mean, this match really served a purpose, is that they were, you know, trying to remove Tess from the corporation for whatever reason. Cornette on commentary called him the corporation's whipping boy. There was dissension between him and Boss Man on the previous episode of Sunday Night Heat. They showed clips of that, so they. I guess, in a way, it served its purpose. Moving on from that, we have X-Pac looking pissed off, looking for Kane. Or no, that was... never mind that. Ignore that. Vince, still at the loading dock.
Yep.
Still waiting for Undertaker. As Austin's watching on the monitor in the back, they go to commercial. X-Pac comes back. He's continuing the search for Kane. Where are you? Yelling, screaming, knocking over shit. Then we see Bob Holly attacking Al Snow backstage. He throws him into the interview set and then steals the head, Al Snow's little companion, and walks off with it. And then we get a beaver cleavage segment.
What the fuck was that, bro?
Exactly. Who thought of that idea? And his name rhymes with Chintz Wusso.
Was that like an incest angle? I don't know.
I'm assuming that's what they were kind of going with. Like, she was the mom and he was the kid, and he was gonna, you know, he was sucking on the tit all the time, like a lot of these millennials out there now.
That took me a second.
Can't get off mom's tit, and can't take accountability for themselves and grow up and be men. That was pretty bad, wasn't it?
It was terrible.
Yeah, I mean, that was a very short-lived gimmick.
I remember ever seeing him. That's the guy from the Headbanger.
Yeah,
right?
Mosh. It was Headbanger Mosh.
They did. I saw him wrestle a singles match before.
They did, I think, like one or two matches, and then they dropped the gimmick. It was that bad. I don't think it lasted very long. Up next, The Godfather with the hose from the Gold Club in Hartford. You know that's where he probably picked a few of those girls up, right?
I remember that black dress was smoking.
The tall one?
Yeah.
I recognized her. I think she was a regular at the Gold Club. Yeah. Because I was young. I was a young guy. And I'll tell you a funny story. Kind of, and it's tied into this a little bit here, okay? When I was younger, I used to work for this catering company that used to do a lot of the entertainment events locally in the area and a lot of the concerts and stuff like that. So we're based out of Xfinity Center, the outdoor amphitheater. And right down the road from there is the old Gold Club, which is now, I think, called Minx Cabaret or something like that, right?
You're exactly right, yeah. Right?
So I haven't been there in fucking years.
Well, I live the single life, yeah. So anyway.
Yeah, it's nothing wrong with that. Yep. Nothing wrong with that. To each his own. And so I worked a shift, and I was like 17 at the time, 16 or 17. And a couple of guys were like, hey, we're going to go to the titty bar. I'm like, I can't get in there. Like, just wear your chef coat. Just walk in and be like, hey, I forgot my ID in my locker at work. So it worked. I did that. And they bought me a lap dance. And it was the first time I ever had been to a strip joint or whatever. So then I became like a regular there because I was worked down the road. So they all knew me. He works at the venue. So I used to go in with like my pass, like my ID badge or whatever. Like, oh yeah, they probably, they didn't never check my ID. So I used to go in there for years underage, not a fucking word. But the tall and the tall girl in the black dress, I recognized her. She worked there.
So hot.
They all were pretty good looking girls. But anyways, long story short, the announcer said it was a non-title match, but then the graphic comes up and says it's an Intercontinental title match. And then Jarrett says, I'm not wrestling Godfather and you hoes unless it's for a title.
Yeah.
And so Godfather says, I'll put the title on the line, but if I win, then Deborah joins the Ho train. They agree. The match is nothing to write home about because Val Venus gets involved. He's trying to flirt with Deborah, but then Nicole Bass shows up to confront Deborah. Val ain't having it. Godfather sneaks the win. What were your thoughts on the whole segment?
I kind of liked it. I had fun.
Yeah.
But they missed a point. I think Deborah with the Godfather would have been so much fun.
You know what?
I they missed that point. I was so mad when I saw Owen Hart. I really wanted it.
Yeah.
That would have been a lot of fun.
That would have been a lot of fun. I'll say this, Deborah. She back then even.
Yeah.
Man, she was a smoke show. She had like a professional sexiness to her with like her little business suits or whatever that she would wear. Let's just say this, to put it lightly, she was a regular in the mental rotation. If you get my drift, she was in the Rolodex. That's for sure. That's for sure. Moving on. Vince is still at the loading dock. Like the Undertaker's gonna fucking show up.
Yep.
My goodness. Here's something stupid too. Pretty Mean Sisters, PMS, Terry Runnels and Jacqueline with Meat, aka Sean Stasiak.
I thought the M was Meat, and I'm like, what does the P and the S stand for then?
Pretty Mean Sisters.
I gotcha.
Yep.
Thank you for bringing
that. They were like little like sex slaves or whatever.
I remember vaguely Jacqueline feuding with Ivory. And,
yep.
Anyway, it wasn't good.
The gimmick, too, was Stasiak, Meat. He was like their sex slave.
His dad must have been like, what the fuck you doing, son?
Getting a paycheck.
That's a good point.
Getting a paycheck.
He's getting a WWF paycheck.
I don't know. I don't know if Stan Stasiak is still alive. I don't believe he is, but Sean Stasiak is, and he's actually a follower of Kicking Out of Two on Twitter. So Meat follows me on Twitter, so you can find.
That being said, Mr. Meat.
But he's actually, I think he's a chiropractor. I think he's like a doctor. He? He got his license and everything. I loved his dad. Really? I wasn't old enough to watch. So
anyway, I didn't get into the old school stuff not until like mid-2000s or whatever. Like the San Martino.
Because you're only like two or three years older than me.
Yeah.
How old are you?
1980. I'm born.
Okay, so yeah, you're 3 years older than me. Yep. Okay.
But that stuff was really good. I give anyone a chance. Look, there's some. Those stinkers are now to the 100% stinkers to us, but the good wrestling's still good wrestling, brother. I recommend anyone watch Stasiak versus San Martino.
Really?
Unbelievable matches, in my opinion.
Okay. All right. Good to know. An endorsement from Dennis J. Levy here on Kicking Out of Two. Next up, Bradshaw from the Acolytes faces Ken Shamrock, but the match doesn't even really happen because Farouk comes out. It's a 2-on-1, and then Test shows up. And we kind of get a little bit of an alliance here with him and Ken Shamrock. What were your thoughts on that?
Um, I
So here's Ken Shamrock with a baseball bat, and he got taken out. He kind of made him look like a jabroni.
I can see that.
That was my take on it. I can
see that.
And I love Ken Shamrock, but he looked like a dick there.
Okay, I can see that. I can definitely see that. Up next, Shane McMahon and The Rock. Another short match.
Yep.
With some corporation interference.
But it had to be. We're talking Rock versus Shane, non-pay-per-view. Everyone knows Shane McMahon's. I give him credit. I didn't think he had it in him to have a good match, but then AJ versus him proved me totally wrong. That was a great
match. So you think that all the other... Let me ask you something. Yeah, yeah. All the crazy things that Shane McMahon did before that match with AJ Styles in 2017?
But it's all spectacle stuff. It was him being a daredevil. You're okay. Like, wow, yeah, that's really cool, and all the other stuff.
And then he goes and actually wrestles AJ. Yeah,
was it a wrestling match?
Yeah.
So you know this is going to be a wrestling match, so you know it's
But were you ever entertained by Shane McMahon's stuff
before? A
million
times.
Okay, all right, sorry. I just didn't know. All right, I'm just asking because, you know, you kind of set the table like he was a nobody until he wrestled AJ Styles.
No, I meant like as a wrestler.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Kind of setting the scene a little bit for, or at least setting up things for Rock moving forward against the corporation, mainly him and Triple H reigniting that rivalry. At least that's how I got that segment. Yeah. It's past 10 o'clock. Vince is still at this fucking loading dock, and there's no Undertaker.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, in the hallowed halls of the Hartford Civic Center, we find the Ministry carrying Stephanie as she's screaming while The Undertaker and Paul Bearer are smiling into the camera as we go to commercial break. And JR is like, they're here! They're in the building! My God! Where's Vince? Somebody get Stephanie! Oh my God! God damn it! Son of a bitch! Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, JR's just going losing his mind. Oh my God! They just kidnapped that little virgin! Anyways, we get back from the commercial break and X-Pac's out because he wants an explanation from Kane, and Owen Hart and Jeff Jarrett show up again, jumping X-Pac from behind. Kane shows up. He cleans house from them, but he still lays out X-Pac.
You know what? Here's the thing.
Oh, here we go.
Okay.
Here we go. Let's hear this rationalization.
Me and Dave, we're on a night out of town in Hartford. Dave's getting jumped by two guys. I'm watching there. Oh, I'm too afraid. I'm gonna get beat up too. And then you fight them off, and then they go running away. And you, of course, you punch me in the face, rightfully so. Those guys come back an hour later. We're still in Hartford for some reason. An hour. I know you. I'm getting jumped by two guys. You're gonna be like this motherfucker. Then you fend them off. And then what would you do? You'd be like, that's how you do it, motherfucker. You punch me in the belly. Yes, you would. So I totally get it. That's exactly.
I can appreciate that rationalization. I can appreciate that. Okay. All right. And then what I liked about it, too, is that, like, you could tell, even though with a mask, and I'll say this, you know, that King character was so well done that, like, even you could even see the emotion in his face as he's wearing a mask. And you could see the look, and even with his body language, like he just turns around and looks at X-Pac, and he's like, he just realized what he just did. And he realizes that this guy is, he's starting to realize that this guy is, you know, the only one that's got his back. The only one that's supporting him.
Yeah.
And so he like scoops up X-Pac and like drapes him over his shoulder as they leave the ringside area. And, you know, and they live to fight another day. And then the Ministry comes out. And we get, you know, Stephanie McMahon on this Undertaker symbol, and Paul Bearer. It's an unholy union, a wedding of sorts.
Yeah.
And she's screaming bloody murder, and then, you know, he wants Undertaker, you know, they want them to exchange vows, and then Big Show comes out, and he gets smoked by the Undertaker in the Ministry, and then Shamrock comes out, and the same thing happens, and then Paul Bearer's like, you may now kiss your bride! And then his Undertaker goes lift up his thing, the glass breaks, Steve Austin shows up, he fucking lays out the Ministry, Undertaker disappears, crowd pops like crazy. I remember that I didn't know for sure he was coming out when I was there that night, but I was like, oh, he's got to come out to save her. Yeah. And then when that glass broke, man, I just felt that building rumble and shake. It doesn't sound that way on TV, but man, when you're there live and you hear that glass break, you're like, oh my God. And it was such a cool sight to see. And he saves Stephanie, unties her from the symbol. She hugs him. he doesn't really know what to do because, you know, she's a McMahon. Vince shows up. He's like, oh, thank you, pal. Thank you. And Austin, you know, is just like, yeah, whatever. Fuck you. And they go off the air. And, yep. And that was the end of Raw. So what did you thought on that segment and Raw overall?
The segment, like I said, if I just wish they put one piece of touch on that segment. Duct tape on Stephanie. And I would have enjoyed it. Oh my god, the fucking Paul Bear had me rolling. I don't know if he was a point. I don't know if that was his angle, but he did. He had me rolling.
Yeah.
And the
you may now kiss your bride.
I just thought, I got a kick out of it. I got a kick out
this of it. This is an unholy union of an alliance.
But. Yeah, that Stephanie ruined it for me though. I would enjoy that immensely if it wasn't for Stephanie screaming.
You know what's cool about that, and I'll bring a little personal touch into this. Is that, you know, cameras go off the air, and at the end of the night, you know, Steve Austin was known for, you know, staying late and celebrating with the crowd, yeah. You know, toasting. So I got to see like the first time he ever did like a beer bash, and you know, he's drinking a shitload of beers, and then he gets on that Undertaker symbol and he's like trying to like, cause it was leaned up against the ropes. Yeah. He's trying to like surf it and balance it, and he's drinking beer off of it. And then I think like, you know, he gets down on the ramp and like the cameraman's like on the bottom of the ramp and he like lies down on his stomach and he's like drinking beers in front of it. Like it was one of those nights where like you didn't want it to end. Like yeah. It was just a lot of fun. If you had to pick, what would you have preferred? That episode of Nitro or
Nitro,
Raw?
Nitro just by a little bit. I give, like I mentioned, Nitro gets a C+. They get a C.
Raw?
They get a C. I was going to give them a C-. I gotta give him a C-. Because then again, Ted Shamrock does a run in with a baseball bat, gets sit on or whatever, splashed by Viscera. Being a Ted Shamrock mark, they get minus points, C-.
Okay. It's hard for me because I was at this Raw and it was the very first televised event I ever went to, so it still holds a special place in my heart. But as I go back and I watched both of them back to back, I kind of preferred this Nitro a little bit better.
Yeah.
I think there was a tad bit more, you know, I guess you could say this was, you know, it's trying to pick like two crappy shows and which one was better of the two. I'm not saying that they were crappy.
Bro, you said it. DDP versus Sting. Puts it over.
That to me, like, that felt like you were watching a pay-per-view main event.
Totally agree.
Like, no commercial break either.
Yeah.
Like, it was... I give Nitro the slight... Watching it as a fan now, 25 years later, I give Nitro the slight edge. If anything, it's like a B- and Raw was a C+. Yep. Like, that's how I look at it. So that was that. I had a lot of fun doing this.
This was a lot of fun.
I'm glad you had a lot of fun recapping a little bit, something different. We'll probably do more of these recaps instead of some of the... You know, we'll watch stuff every now and then, but, you know... Just trying to change things up a little bit with the podcast. And if I recommend anything for you guys out there, it's DDP and Sting. Go and watch it from the April 26, 1999 episode of WCW Monday Nitro. All right. Next month of May, your birthday's coming up.
Yeah.
So we're going to celebrate that with a Dennis J. Levy wild card birthday watch along. That's a mouthful. So I'm going to give you a list, and you're going to decide what we're going to watch. And we're also going to pay homage and tribute to the late Bray Wyatt as his birthday will be approaching this month. So we're going to talk about his career, favorite moments, least favorite moments.
That's my dude. Everyone knows that.
Yeah, so we'll be all over that.
Yeah. Hopefully I can make it through it.
Yeah.
I tried to watch the Hall of Fame. Couldn't do it.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, my God. When I
still haven't watched the documentary either.
I can't even do the weekend of his death. It was, I think it was SmackDown, right?
The video tribute.
I can't even watch that, bro.
Yeah.
It's too much for me.
Yeah,
man.
I get it.
That's what I do, man.
Hopefully,
he was the only reason why I was watching current wrestling.
Yeah. Okay. We'll try to, you know, we'll see how this all pans out. But yeah. I just thought it'd be nice to pay tribute to him on his birthday, around his birthday. And share our thoughts on what he meant to wrestling and what, you know, he obviously meant to you, because you being, you know, the big one of the biggest Bray Wyatt fans that I know personally. So we'll be on the lookout for that. Try to incorporate some other content, even some ECW stuff into the show, into the fold. Definitely want to do in June. You and I sitting down and watching No Holds Barred, the movie.
I've been lobbying this for since day one of our podcast.
Since day one, or just more recently?
You know my memory shit. Anyway, but you know better.
Reckless speculator over here.
I thought
we're gonna watch No Holds Barred in June.
I want to do that so bad.
We're gonna watch No Holds Barred in June. And because summertime.
If you do that with anyone else, you're dead to me. You're dead to me.
It's you and me.
I mean, people could be involved. I would love to have Justin, whatever. Yep. But I'm on that podcast, okay. Motherfucker.
You are 100%. You are definitely gonna make that happen. Any ideas of things you want to share and discuss on future episodes? I'm leaving it open to you.
I'm always an ECW guy. Maybe more ECW things.
Okay.
But I don't know. You know me. I always cherish us talking about wrestling and stuff like that. I think you're a terrific host. So that being said, you are the manager and I'm the assistant manager. I think we just have a little good pair where you delegate something and I.
So you like the homework assignments?
I do.
Okay, so we'll keep that a regular thing. Look forward to many more of these with you. And with that being said, I think it's about time we officially put this Monday Night War double feature recap down for the three count. And we'll see you all next time.